हरिः ओम् तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ओम् सदाशिवसमारम्भाम् व्यासशङ्करमध्यमाम् ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः We are seeing the second section of the first Mundakam. We have covered, we are seeing the 10th mantra. And these mantras, Upanishad, presents the advantages and also limitations of the performance of rituals and their results. Upanishad makes it a point to discuss the limitations of results of actions so that we will understand the importance, the necessity of the attainment of knowledge. That freedom, liberation, moksha is possible only through jnanam. Because mokshaha, the word mokshaha, literally it means freedom. But what is implied by the word freedom is freedom from unhappiness. Therefore, what is implied is happiness. And the happiness that is sought after is not time-bound happiness. We do not want to let go of the happiness which we attain. Therefore, if even though it is as though attained, happiness is as though attained, it is actually discovery of what is already there. And then it must be eternal. Therefore, if it has to be permanent, and the moksha is permanent, and the permanent moksha is accomplishable only through the knowledge, it cannot be attained as a result of time-bound action. That is made repeatedly clear in all these mantras. Anyway, so we'll see here the 10th mantra. Ishtapottam manyamana varishtam nanyachreyo vedayante pramodhaha nakasya prishthe ते सुकृते नभूत्वा इमं लोकं हीनतरं वा विशन्ति. So in this mantra, ishtam karma, purtam karma, two types of karma are mentioned. Ishtam ishtihi, ishtihi, the word ishtihi is a ikarantaha strilingaha ishti shabdaha. Ishtihi means puja, worship. Ishtihi is another word for yajna, worship. Whereas ishtam karma means religious activities, performance of rituals, etc. come under the category of the ishtam karma. Purtam karma, all other activities done for the social welfare, purtam karma. So whatever karma you do, then karma can produce only a time-bound result. That result will not give us moksha. To make us understand this fact, Upanishad presents this verse. Upanishad does not say that we should not do social service activities. Upanishad wants to warn that even social service activities, or even though they're important, they must be performed, but we should not mistake them to be the ultimate end, ultimate goal. There's a lot of people who think serving the society itself is enough. There's a very good thinking. I want to serve the world. I want to really help the downtrodden. I want to help the people who are suffering. I want to relieve their pain. I want to contribute for others' happiness. That's amazing. That's a very great idea, no doubt. But Upanishad says we should not fool ourselves by mistaking it to be the ultimate end. That is not the ultimate end, because those, even such karma can be performed for preparing the mind for jnanam. Any karma must be used as a preparatory discipline, performed as yoga, to prepare our mind ultimately for jnanam, because jnanam alone will bless us with moksha. So, Upanishad says, Ishtapurtam varishtam manyamanaha. Considering this Ishtapurtam to be the ultimate, most exalted, varishtam means most exalted, is the greatest. Anyata shreyaha na anyata shreyaha vedayante. And they think there's nothing greater than that. Anyata shreyaha na vedayante. They do not know there's something which is greater, something which is so more superior, something to be. They do not know that. Shreyaha na vedayante. They do not know. Pramudhaha, because they are deluded. Who are deluded? Who have not analyzed the purusharthas. Who have not analyzed the purusharthas. They have not understood what artha is for, what kama is for, what is artha, what is kamaha, what is dharmaha, what is that I really pursue. Why do I pursue artha? Why do I pursue kama? What am I pursuing all these things for? What is it ultimately I'm searching for? You know, they have not analyzed the purusharthas thoroughly. They do not have purusharthas nischayaha. And they think they do not have what is permanent and what is impermanent. They're still deluded. They're good people, well-meaning people, but still confused people. Why they're well-meaning? Because they're interested in performance of Vedic rituals. They're interested in doing service for social well-being, social welfare. Therefore, they're very well-meaning people. Well-meaning does not mean being a well-meaning person, does not mean being a clear-headed person. So here Upanishad says, even though they're well-meaning people, they're still deluded people. Why they think performance of social service activities and performance of rituals, and that itself is the exalted greatest. There's nothing greater than that. They do not know there's something better than that. There's no other good for them. Nothing better than that. They do not know about the moksha being the ultimate end, and moksha can be accomplished only through jnanam. And such people, by their activities, definitely, doubtlessly, they earn abundance of punyam. All the good karma they do help them earn punyam. With the abundance of punyam, they will not suffer, definitely. They will, as a result of the punyam they have earned, they will go to the higher lokas, they go to Swargaloka. And when they reach Swargaloka, how they go, when they go, those things are not given here. Upanishad straight away wants to present the fact. After the Parda gets exhausted, when they leave the physical body, and such people in subtle form, you know, not for the physical body will be disintegrated here itself, subtle form, they will go to higher loka, heaven. That's where Nakaha. I told you last week itself, akaha, no, kam means, you know, kam means happiness, and akaha means sorrow. Na akaha yatra, where there is no pain, no suffering, is called nakaha, which is heaven. Nakasya prishthe, they go to heaven, and the heaven they stay. And the best of the place, the exalted of the place of Prishta means back. The back of heaven means what? They stay in the middle of the heaven. And then they enjoy all pleasures, heavenly pleasures. Sukrute anubhutva. So having enjoyed the heavenly pleasures as a result of their punyam they have earned, when the punyam gets exhausted, as long as punyam is there, they remain there. When the punyam gets exhausted, then they return. Vishanti, they return. Vishanti means they enter. They enter into where from there they return and they enter into this world, Imam Lokam. Imam Lokam, they enter into this world of human beings, mortals. Or suppose if the next set of prarabdha does not have adequate punyam to be born a human being, and there's a possibility of their assuming even the bodies of inferior order. Okay, heenataram va vishanti. There is no guarantee. Why? If the next set of prarabdha karma, suppose next set of prarabdha karma doesn't have adequate punyam to be born a human being. Don't get frightened immediately. Oh, will I be born next genma? What will be? Don't worry about at all. Okay. If people, there's a possibility of even assuming a body of ordinary creatures of inferior order. Hinataram va vishanti. What it says, what Upanishad wants to say is that you cannot escape rebirth. This is what you have to understand. How much ever punyam you accumulate, whatever good karma you do, whatever punya karma you do, of course, if you do papa karma, if a karma performed is in against dharma and one involves oneself in papa karma, definitely there's no way of preparing the mind, no way of attaining jnanam. We accumulate papam and we have to definitely, though that papa karma phalam, the result of wrong actions has to be exhausted. That papam will be translated into the experience of pain in life, no doubt. Okay, that's a different thing. But even if you accumulate punyam, by involving oneself in all religious rituals, worship, prayer, performance of rituals, practice of meditation, even Saguna Brahma Upasanam, practice of meditation upon the Lord with the form Saguna Upasanam. Even if we do any karma, just completely forgetting myself, I think only of others' welfare. I do all sorts of other social service activities. Any karma you do, definitely all good karma will help you earn abundance of punyam. With the punyam you have earned, how much ever punyam a person earns, no punyam has any capacity to delete your ignorance. Ignorance cannot be resolved at all. As long as ajnanam is there, with all punyam also, still you will be ahankari. Ahankari means what? You will be entertaining wrong notion about the self. There'll be the error in the perception of yourself cannot be corrected at all. The error in the perception of the world cannot be corrected at all. With erroneous self-perception, the erroneous perception of the world, definitely any number of notions you entertain will be wrong notions. Therefore, you will continue to be ahankari, continue to be again the common human fundamental problem of sense of smallness centered on I will not be resolved at all. Therefore, you will continue to be a bound person. There is no mokshaha. And with that wrong notion and with wrong identity, naturally, even after going to heaven, exhausting all the punyam also, there's no possibility of escaping rebirth. You will be assuming another body. You'll be born definitely again and again and again and again and again and again. Because as long as ahankara is there, so long will there be doership and enjoyership. Aham karta, aham bhokta, these notions you cannot resolve. Therefore, you have to be back. There's no wrong identity doesn't go, doership doesn't go, ajnanam doesn't go. Therefore, as long as ajnanam is there, your mind is sustained well, healthy. Mind is retained healthy. Okay. Therefore, mind is retained healthy. What now? Mind is sustained and retained means mind will come back assuming another body. Therefore, mind has to be resolved for good. Only then there is a videha muktihi, permanent freedom from bondage of samsara is possible only when mind will be resolved for good. And mind can be resolved for good only in the wake of the jnanam, when the ignorance is resolved for good. Resolving, having the ignorance resolved for good is having the mind resolved for good. And having the mind resolved for good is not assumption, not assuming another body, not being born again. Meendum piravamai is what is said to be, you know, videha muktihi. Otherwise, there's no way of being, attaining freedom. There'll be, definitely you one will come back. Assuming another body will be inevitable, unavoidable. If it was possible, already we would have escaped. We wouldn't have had even this birth. The very present birth itself is here, is a proof that it is not our choice. Therefore, next birth also will not be our choice. Okay. In keeping with the punyam and papam, next set of prarabdha karma, we don't know what next set of prarabdha is going to be. Accordingly, this person who turns from heaven, they enter into the world of mortals assuming the human bodies, or they enter into even the bodies of inferior beings of inferior order. Hinataramva vishanti. It means there is no mokshaha. They continue to remain in samsaraha. That is the fact revealed. Here, let us go to the next mantra. Now, having discussed about the performance of rituals, the limitations of performance of rituals, and even other social service activities. In this mantra, Upanishad even talks about the limitation of the meditation. Even meditation, this 11th verse is really, people who think meditation is everything, for them it will be a pain, because even limitation of meditation also is mentioned here. Even meditation is a mental activity. As long as meditation cannot remove ignorance, because it's a mental activity. Why meditation cannot remove ignorance? Because any activity is a product of ignorance. Any physical action, oral action, mental action, any motion itself is a product of ignorance. Therefore, action is always ignorance friendly. Action cannot undo ignorance. What about meditation? Meditation is a mental activity. Meditation cannot remove ignorance. Therefore, as long as ignorance is, bondage is there. Therefore, meditation cannot free you from bondage. This is what is limit, understand the limitation of meditation also here. And I told you many times before, meditation can be practiced before the attainment of knowledge of the truth. Meditation can be practiced even after the attainment of knowledge of the truth. So before the attainment of knowledge, if meditation is practiced, definitely meditation is used as a preparatory discipline. Meditation must be upon something other than one's own self. Meditation before the attainment of knowledge must be meditation upon anything, something or the other, other than one's own self. Because you cannot meditate upon your own real nature when you are ignorant of your real nature. How can you meditate upon your real nature when you're ignorant of your real nature? Therefore, meditation before the attainment of knowledge must be upon something other than one's own self. And Shastram says that the object of meditation must be something which symbolizes Bhagavan Ishvara. Only then we can call it a meditation. It is a Saguna Brahma Upasanam. A Saguna Upasanam. And such meditation is practiced only as a preparatory discipline for Antahkarna Naischalyam, for mental steadiness. That is not for removal of ignorance. And meditation practiced after the attainment of knowledge is contemplation. Because there the object of meditation is not different from one's own real nature. Object of meditation is one's own real nature. Therefore, the meditator's swarupam itself is meditated upon in contemplation, which is meditation practiced after the attainment of knowledge. So in this contemplation is meditation because contemplation is a mental activity. But meditation is not contemplation because in meditation, the object of meditation is not one's own real nature. Is it clear? Okay. Your meditation can be practiced before the attainment of knowledge as a preparatory discipline. Meditation can be practiced after the attainment of knowledge for assimilation of knowledge. But meditation is not practiced for the removal of ignorance because meditation cannot remove ignorance. Because meditation itself is a mental activity. With this understanding, let us enter into this verse. Tapasraddhe ye hyupavasantyaranye. Tapasraddhe ye hyupavasantyaranye. Tapasraddhe. Dhe ye hyupavasantyaranye shanta vidvamso bhikshacharyam charantaha shanta vidvamso bhikshacharyam charantaha tapasraddhe ye hyupavasantyaranye Shanta vidvamsto bhikshacharyam charantaha suryadvarena te virajah prayanti yatramrutas sapurusho hyavyayatma tapasraddhe ye hyupavasantyaranye tapasraddhe ye hyupavasantyaranye tapasraddhe ye hyupavasantyaranye shanta vidvamso bhikshacharyam charantaha shanta vidvamso bhikshacharyam charantaha suryadvarena te virajah prayanti suryadvarena తే విరజా ప్రయాంతి యత్రామృత స పురుషో హ్యవ్యయాత్మా యత్రామృత స పురుషో హ్యవ్యయాత్మా యత్రామృత స పురుషో హ్యవ్యయాత్మా. Actually, here Upanishad talks about the person who is involved in serious meditation, proper meditation, Upanishadic meditation, Vedantic meditation, the Vedic meditation, not some meditation what we practice nowadays. In fact, meditation practice nowadays is not even Vedic meditation. Some meditation they practice. Maybe the spirit behind the meditation is the same. But even he presents the limitation of even such meditation. Tapaha, Shraddha. Let's take the first two words. Tapaha, Satapas, Sakaranta, Napumsakalinga, Shraddha. Then Shraddha, Akaranta, Strilinga, Shraddha. You know the meaning of these two words separately. The word tapaha, austerity, penance. You know that. The committed. Being committed to any given discipline is a sort of tapas. And shraddha means shraddha, faith, But in this mantra, these two words do not convey the same meaning. That's what I want to say. Tapaha, penance, austerity. Tapas becomes tapaha. Shraddha means unflinching faith. But here, tapaha and shraddha do not mean the same. The word tapaha stands for all forms of activities. Ritual, performance of rituals, karma, all activities. Shraddha stands for upasanam, meditation. Saguna Brahma upasanam, saguna upasanam. In saguna upasanam, what does it mean? Meditation. Nirguna upasanam, contemplation. So when you say meditation, you can understand definitely meditation before the attainment of jnanam, which means meditation upon something other than one's own real nature. So here tapaha shraddha, here Hiranyagarbha upasanam, meditation upon Hiranyagarbha. Some specific meditation prescribed in the upasana kanda. So shraddha here means upasanam. Tapaha means all forms of activities, including performance of rituals. And together, tapaha plus shraddha in dual, tapashraddhe. Dual. Because shraddha is a feminine word, we use in shraddhe, tapashraddhe. Be careful. In this context, Upanishad uses these words in giving a different meaning, completely different meaning. Shraddha, if you go and search for the meaning of the word Shraddha in Upa dictionary, you will not find the meaning meditation. Okay? Here, Shraddha. Tapaha Shraddha, tapashraddhe. Ye, relative pronoun. Ye, those who. Hi. Ye, hi. Upavasanti. Your Yan Sandhi, having learned Yan Sandhi, it must be very useful for you to understand. Upavasanti. Upavasanti. Upavasanti literally means living a life of meditation. Those who live their lives of meditation. Upavasanti means, Upavasanti also means Upavasaha. Remember the word Upavasaha? Upavasanti is the verb. Noun is Upavasaha. All these people, Upavasaha means they think it's a fasting. Okay, not eating food is Upavasaha. The word Upavasaha is used in religious and day-to-day language expression transaction, it is used to mean fasting. Today, people suppose I offer some food. No, I do upavasa. Aham upavasami. Aham upavasami means what? I fast. It's a literal meaning. You have to understand the literal meaning and what is the meaning given here. Okay. Tapaha, literal meaning you know. Shraddha, literal meaning you know. And then upavasaha, literal meaning is what? Fasting. Actually speaking, even on the days of fasting, people are supposed to be remembering Bhagavan. When you fast, what are you supposed to do? It's a religious discipline. Fasting is a religious discipline. Of course, we don't fast every day. We'll faint. Not every day. Once in a while, we fast. Some people fast on Ekadashi. Some people fast on some other days. I go out of the track a little bit just to make it very clear. Upavasaha means living near, living. Upavasaha means living near. So upavasanti means what? Being, upavasaha means being meditative. Beautiful meaning. Upavasaha means what? People in day-to-day converse, in day-to-day transaction, people loosely use this term upavasaha as fasting. Take it as fasting. But fasting is okay, the religious discipline. But on the day of fasting, we are supposed to be meditative upon Bhagavan. So upavasaha means being meditative, being thoughtful, remembering Bhagavan. So vasaha means living. Upavasaha means living near. Living near means what? Living near does not mean physically, does not count where you are physically. Placing one's attention of the mind in Bhagavan, near Bhagavan, placing one's mind near Bhagavan is upavasaha. Placing one's mind near Bhagavan is upavasaha. So placing one's mind near Bhagavan means remembering Bhagavan, thinking of Bhagavan, being meditative upon Bhagavan is upavasaha. Is it clear now? So upavasanti means, the word upavasanti is a plural verb, third person plural verb, present tense verb. Those who live a life of meditation. Ye upavasanti, those people who are given to the discipline of meditation. Which means the ye relative pronoun ye actually refers to the vanaprasthis, people of vanaprastha ashrama. People of vanaprastha ashrama means what? People who are free from their household duties, who have moved on to the next stage of life, and who want to spend their time mostly in meditation and worship and prayer, and with the reduced household other obligatory duties. Where vanaprastha ashrama is. And here, ye upavasanti. Aranye. Aranyam is a jungle. People either go to a secluded place where they live quietly. They keep themselves away from families. Okay. So other responsibilities. Doesn't mean everybody should go and live in a jungle. This is the problem. Okay. Even at home, if we don't take too much of responsibility, and if you have, after not ignoring the responsibility here, shirk responsibilities here, after having completed one's duties and responsibilities, if a person decides to spend more of one's time in prayer and worship, etc., then it is vanaprastha ashrama only. Whether you live at home or whether you live in a jungle. But here, generally, it is literally, it's talking about those people. aranye ye upavasanti, people who go to a secluded place and where away from families, away from other noisy areas of cities, and they live a life of meditation. Ye aranye hi upavasanti. Ye hi aranye upavasanti. Upavasanti aranye. Is it clear now? Once you break the sentence, it's very simple, isn't it? It's a kindergarten sentence. Ye hi upavasanti aranye. Those people of vanaprastha ashrama, who are given to the discipline of practice of meditation, saguna brahma upasanam, so they live in jungle. Aranye vasanti, upavasanti. They live life meditation in jungle, means secluded place which is free from noise. That doesn't mean really jungle. And those people, shantaha, not only they only practice meditation, tapaha shraddhe upavasanti. They practice meditation along with the performance of their own relevant duties of their own ashrama. Tapaha shraddhe upavasanti aranye means what? Tapaha shraddhe upavasanti means they pursue their regular duties of their ashrama. Relevant duties. As a vanaprasthi, whatever, as a person of vanaprastha ashrama, whatever duties a person has, he performs those duties. So performing their own duties of vanaprastha ashrama, they also practice meditation. Is it clear? So those people of vanaprastha ashrama, who live in a quite noise-free place and practice meditation, or given the discipline of practice of meditation along with the performance of their own regular duties of their relevant duties of their ashram. Tapaha shraddhe upavasanti aranye. And those people, shantaha, because they do their duties properly, and they also are given the discipline of practice of meditation, keeping themselves aloof in a noise-free jungle, they are actually relatively quiet-minded people. Shantaha. They are relatively peaceful minded people, shantaha. And then vidvamsaha, the word vidvan singular, vidvamsaha plural. Vidvamsaha literally means learned people, scholar, wise person, but here vidvamsaha means meditators. In this context, the word vidvamsaha means meditators. As I said already, those who are given to the discipline of practice of saguna brahma upasanam, meditators, vidvamsaha. So, ye vidvamsaha. Those people of vanaprastha ashrama who are given to the discipline of meditation, who pursue their regular relevant duties of their ashrama along with the practice of meditation. Therefore, they are shantaha. Is it clear? Shantaha. Shantaha means they are relatively tranquil minded, disturbance free minded. Are they absolutely peaceful? When I say relatively peaceful minded, what it means is their peace can be easily disturbed. They're peaceful, they're relatively peaceful, relatively tranquil minded, but their peace can be disturbed. Absolutely peaceful minded are those whose peace cannot be disturbed at all. Which means who cannot become unhappy at all. These people can become easily unhappy because their peace can be disturbed. Okay, people of disturbable peace. Shantaha. Then Vidvamsaha. What do they do? Bhiksha charyam charantaha. Bhiksha charyam charantaha. They also live on alms. They don't plan menu and then plan it morning, get up and then decide what to cook, how much I should cook, and then what all dishes I should cook, what all dishes I should, how I should spread this sheet, the table, how I should eat. There's no planning, okay? They just, when they go out, ask for alms, and whatever they're given, they eat. They eat and feel satisfied with the food, whatever is given to them as alms. So they live on alms. So that's why bhiksha means alms. Bhiksha. Bhiksha is adjective. So here bhiksham is noun. Bhiksha charyam means living a life, taking alms from people. Okay. Living on alms is called bhiksha charya. Bhiksha charya means life lived on alms. Bhiksha charyam charantaha. So living a life on alms, taking alms from other people, okay? Bhiksha from other people. They live their life all the time. Why are they given bhiksha? See, a grihastha is the only person who is supposed to feed all people of all other ashrams. Sannyasi, vanaprasthi, brahmachari, all of them must be fed by a grihastha. That's why grihastha must earn a lot of money. Grihastha must have everything. Anyway, so bhiksha charyam charantaha is vidvamsaha. How, no, they are relatively tranquil minded. Because they live in a quiet, noise-free place like a jungle, and they follow their own duties and doing their own duties with a commitment, and they're also strictly given to the discipline of practice of meditation. Therefore, they are relatively tranquil-minded. And they don't have to worry about the food. They also live on alms. What happens to them? When people live always practicing meditation, going out for bhiksha, collecting bhiksha, living bhiksha food, eating bhiksha food, come back to their place and live in a quiet, noise-free place, do their regular duties, avanaprasthasrami, whatever duties they have, and they practice meditation, they live like that. So they are not disturbed. Relatively, they are tranquil minded. Are they jnanis? No. They're still like jnanis. What happens to such people? What happens to them? There is a time, that time comes, the prarabdha comes to an end. When the prarabdha gets exhausted, they also have to leave. But because they live such life of meditation, doing their duties as vanaprasthis, and they also accumulate punyam. They have more punyam, much more abundance of punyam they earn than other people. People who perform rituals, they earn punyam. People who also earn punyam by their other social service activities. But these people who practice meditation along with the performance of ritual earn much more punyam. Which means they are eligible to go to highest world. Okay, they are eligible to travel through solar path and bright path. and they become relatively free from all sins, that they are eligible to travel through solar path. Therefore, it's called karma jnana samuchayaha. Karma jnana samuchayaha means synthesizing meditation along with the ritual, performance of ritual. Okay, and when they practice both karma, mere performance of ritual produces punyam, and performance of rituals along with social service activities produce punyam. So other activities also produce punyam, whereas here performance of one's own duties along with the practice of meditation and performance of rituals along with the practice of meditation produces much more punyam. As a result of that punyam, they become free from certain papams also. Virajaha. So, virajaha. In fact, in Vaishnavism, they talk about the Viraja river, where these devis, they come and take you, they make you bathe there, you become clean, etc. They talk about all those things. But here, Upanishad says, virajaha. So, virajaha means they become rajas, it means papam. Virajaha, being free from, relatively being free from papam, virajaha, certain papams, they become eligible to travel through the solar bright path, shukla gatihi. So he says, surya dwarena, through the solar path, or bright path, te. So ye is compared now, te. Ye vidvamsaha tapaha shadde aranye upavasanti, bhikshacharyam charantaha shantaha aranye upavasanti, te virajaha suryadvarena prayanti. This is one sentence, clean sentence. Those people alone, they travel through solar path, prayanti travel through suryadvara. By traveling to that path, where do they go? Yatra amrutaha saha hi avyayatma purushaha. Yatra amrutaha. Yatra where? Amrutaha means immortal Hiranyagarbha, avyayatma, imperishable purushaha. The Hiranyagarbha is, they go to Brahmalokaha. So here immortal and then that imperishable should be understood relative, not absolute. Absolutely eternal, absolutely immortal, absolutely imperishable is the reality, consciousness implied by the term Atma or Brahma. Okay? Reality alone is absolutely immortal, absolutely eternal, absolutely imperishable. But here Brahma, when you say this entire subtle manifestation, Brahma here. Hiranyagarbha, when you say Hiranyagarbha, is relatively eternal, relatively immortal, relatively, you know, imperishable. So, which means what Upanishad wants to say, this person goes to Brahmaloka, remains one with Hiranyagarbha. Avyayatma, hi avyayatma. Avyayatma means imperishable. Imperishable self. Okay, not doesn't mean atma here. Avyayatma, together to be taken as imperishable. Yatra amrutaha. Amrutaha means immortal. yatra where immortal saha purushaha. Here the Hiranyagarbha saha purushaha means that purushaha here implies Hiranyagarbha. He indeed avyayatma. See avyayatma amritaha, these two words, adjectives of the word purushaha, which means Hiranyagarbha. Hiranyagarbha is imperishable. And Hiranyagarbha is immortal. How immortal? Not absolutely. Relatively immortal, relatively imperishable. Which means this person goes to Brahmaloka. We'll understand it very well, don't worry. Which means even the entire subtle manifestation is subject to get resolved once. It means even Hiranyagarbha has his time limitation. Nothing will remain. There will be a time, Mahapralaya time, the time of total deluge, everything will resolve. And what will be there? Everything will resolve, but what will be there? Again, reality in the form of consciousness alone will be there. Everything will resolve in consciousness. Therefore, even Hiranyagarbha, this person, if at all he goes, without the physical form, he can be in subtle form as Hiranyagarbha. That's what is attainment of Hiranyagarbha Loka. And even for that, this person needs abundance of punyam. Not easy. Going to Brahmaloka is not at all easy. It involves great, tremendous amount of effort. So living a disciplined life of meditation is not an easy joke. So this person lives such a... So here the people, all the verb used is in plural verb. So ye upavasanti, those people here, if you take ye, tapaha shaddhe, baikshacharyam charantaha, ye vidvamsaha, baikshacharyam charantaha, shantaha, tapashraddhe, aranye upavasanti. See that now? Ye vidvamsaha, baikshacharyam charantaha, are you all following? I'm putting pause order now. Ye vidvamsaha, baikshacharyam charantaha, shantaha, aranye, tapashraddhe upavasanti. Te, virajaha, suryadvarena, prayanti. Yatra, amritaha, hi, avyayatma, saha purushaha, asti. Is it clear? Ye, te. So, here these vanaprastha, people of vanaprastha ashrama, who are mentioned here, how are they? Who vidvamsaha. First take the word vidvamsaha. Vidvamsaha, people who are given to, seriously given to the practice of discipline of meditation. So, they're vanaprastha, people of vanaprastha ashrama. And how do they live their lives? Baikshacharyam charantaha. Okay, living their lives, taking alms. And they are tranquil minded, relatively tranquil minded, shantaha. Why? Because they live in a noise free place, pursuing their regular duties along with the practice of meditation. Tapaha shraddhe upavasanti. Aranye upavasanti. Baikshacharyam charantaha upavasanti. Shantaha upavasanti. Ye, those people. Ye vidvamsaha. Those meditators who live in jungle, pursuing their duties, along with the practice of meditation, living on alms, maintaining their mental tranquility, and those people becoming free from papam, te, those people, virajaha, Suryadwarena, after the death, fall of the body. When it doesn't say all that. After the fall of the body, they travel through Shukla Gatihi, Surya Gatihi, through the solar path, and then they go to Brahma Loka. They travel and they go to Brahma Loka, where Brahmaji is. Who is this Brahma? Avyayatma, relatively imperishable, relatively immortal, Hiranyagarbheshwaraha. Hiranyagarbha is. They go to Brahma Loka. Even, what Upanishad wants to say, even people who perform rituals, do their duties along with the practice of meditation, they also do not attain moksha. They only go to Brahma Loka. And after going to Brahma Loka, being again, if they have adequate punyam, being taught by Brahmaji, they can attain jnanam and moksha there. Then that moksha is called krama muktihi. Otherwise, it is possible for them to come back also. Which means even those who practice meditation do not attain jnanam or do not attain moksha. They can maximum, the karma palam can take a person to Brahma Loka. It will not help a person attain moksha. See, even Mundakopanishad is a first book. Okay, first Upanishad you are studying. Here itself, before even going to the study of other Upanishads, you must be convinced of the fact that meditation will not help you attain moksha. Maximum punyam, a karma punyam, a person can earn by practicing meditation along with the performance of other rituals and other righteous activities, a person can go to higher loka. What the highest benefit of karma palam, highest benefit of karma palam is going to Brahma Loka. Not attainment of jnanam, not attainment of moksha. This is what is the lesson Upanishad wants to teach here. Which means, definitely, jnanam alone will free. And for that jnanam, you need pramanam. Pramanam is what? Pramanam has to be operated. Shravanam, mananam, nididhyasanam. Shravanam, mananam, nididhyasanam alone you need for jnanam. To enjoy the benefit of jnanam in terms of moksha, what you need is shravanam, not dhyanam. Dhyanam without shravanam cannot remove your ignorance. Dhyanam with, followed by shravanam, dhyanam preceded by shravanam, will help you assimilate the knowledge. Is it clear now? Any doubt in the mantra verse? Brahma Loka, now I know Prabhuji, what doubt you have. Oh, how is Brahmaji sitting in his place? Brahma Loka. With four heads or one head? And how does he teach? And how does this person go there? After going, will he be massaging Brahmaji's feet? All the doubts you have, I understand. Please understand here, going to heaven itself. Puja Swamiji told once in the class beautifully. See, going to higher lokas, Upanishad talks about. But it's a non-verifiable matter for belief. Whichever culture talks about heaven, doesn't matter. It is a non-verifiable matter for belief. So you cannot disprove there's no heaven at all, nor can we prove definitely there's a heaven. Therefore, it's a non-verifiable fact. But Vedashastram says, so we do have 100% trust, faith in Vedas, Vedic teaching. Okay? Therefore, we listen. But the thing is, Veda does not say heaven is the end of everything. Okay? Veda says you are the truth. And discovering yourself is discovering freedom, which you are searching for. And you are the heaven also, not outside of you. Okay, you are the very existence of heaven or anything else in the world. That is the fact which is verifiable fact. Okay, the ultimate fact the Veda reveals is a verifiable fact. That is why here Upanishad mentions all these things just to say any pleasure enjoyable anywhere in higher lokas is like your dream. For you to experience any pleasure, the dream pleasure, you know, all that you need is only mind. You don't need your physical body. Without a physical body and you have a dream, the whole dream enjoyment of dream pleasure is your mind, isn't it? Like that, any heavenly pleasure also, enjoyment of any heavenly pleasure is like your dream. So maybe you have a long dream. Okay. But anyway, once you wake up from sleep, at least hear the dream you can remember. Once you come back from other higher worlds, you will not remember anything what you enjoyed before. So you cannot share with your friends what all you enjoyed there. Okay, there's no problem. You can never come back and boast what all enjoyed in heaven. Oh, I saw Apsaras dance. You cannot talk about it. You would have forgotten everything completely. Anyway, what I want to say here, what Upanishad wants to say, even if a person practices meditation, not ordinary local meditation, even if a meditation prescribed in the Veda, Upasana Kanda of the Veda, Hiranyagarbha Upasanam, the person practices, that to living a very disciplined life, living on alms, putting up with a lot of discomforts, living in a jungle, but still maintaining his mental peace, doing all his duties along with practice of performance of rituals and practice of meditation also. This person lives his life and maintains his mental peace, relatively maintains his disturbance, the mental peace. Relatively his peace was shantaha. And only such people who always maintain their peace throughout and they still ajnanis, they're ignorantly peaceful. Okay? Ignorantly peaceful people. When the paratha gets exhausted, like any other human being, they also leave the physical body and they definitely travel through solar path and go to Brahmaloka. Because adequately, because abundant of punyam they have earned, they become free from certain papams, they're eligible to travel through solar path, they go to Brahmaloka and they do not attain moksha. They can only go to Brahmaloka. And there is a possibility of attaining krama muktihi. After going to Brahmaloka, it is possible for them to attain jnanam, attain krama muktihi. Even there, they need to attain jnanam for moksha. So, Shastram says, instead of going all the ways, making so much of effort to go to Brahmaloka, there attain jnanam and attain moksha krama mukti, why don't you attain jnanam here itself, attain sadhya mukti? You cannot attain, there's no greater benefit of result of action than going to Brahmaloka, which itself is not moksha, which is not freedom. It's still within the realm of bondage only. Okay. Having discussed this much, Upanishad wants to go to a concluding verse, mantra. Parikshalokan karmachitan
brahmanah. Parikshalokan karmachitan brahmanah. Nirvedamayat nastyakrutakrutena tadvijnanartham sagurumevabhigachet samitpanihi. Shrotriyam Brahma Nishtham. All the mantras previously discussed were just to bring one to this final verse. பரீக்ஷலோகான் கர்மசிதான் பிராமணஹா நிர்வேதமாயாத்.
For the sake of meaning, I am putting like this.
பரீக்ஷலோகான் கர்மசிதான் பிராமணஹா நிர்வேதமாயாத். நாஸ்த்யக்ருதஃ க்ருதேன தத்விஜ்ஞானார்த்தம் சகுருமேவாபிகச்சேத்
சமித்பாணிஹி ஸ்ரோத்ரியம் ப்ரஹ்மநிஷ்டம் சமித்பாணிஹி ஸ்ரோத்ரியம் ப்ரஹ்மநிஷ்டம் Having discussed the limitations of all types of karma and their results, including the practice of Hiranyagarbha Upasanam, now Upanishad says how Shravanam is the only means of attaining Jnanam. Dhyanam is not the sadhanam for Jnanam, but Shravanam is the sadhanam for Jnanam. If sadhyam is Jnanam, sadhanam must be Shravanam, not Dhyanam. Sadhyam is Jnanam. What is to be accomplished is Jnanam, for which sadhanam, the means of attainment of Jnanam, is not Dhyanam, but Shravanam. Upanishad says here, Shravanam is the only means of attainment of Jnanam. And for a person to prepare himself, to commit himself to the to be given to the discipline of listening systematically, regularly to the unfoldment of the words of the Shastram, the person must be very clear. He must have Vivekaha. If there's no Vivekaha, if there's no Vairagyam, and he cannot come for Shravanam, he must have Vairagyam. What is the Vairagyam? He must be dispassionate. What is dispassion? Dispassion is nothing but the maturity. The maturity born of the understanding of the fact that nothing in the world will give him moksha. Nothing in the world can make him happy. Why? Everything in the world is subject to time, including actions, including result of actions, including practice of meditation, including result of practice of meditation. So all forms of wealth, artha, kama, dharma, you can reduce all the pursuits, you know, into three as artha, kama, dharmas. Even dharma is very important, but dharma is also has limitation. But dharma cannot remove ignorance, because dharma is a punyam earned as a result of right action. So artha, kama, dharmas cannot help one attain jnanam or moksha. It is shravanam which alone can help one attain jnanam, which is moksha, which itself is moksha. Which means one must have that vairagyam, the dispassion. For a person to have that vairagyam, he must have the viveka. what is that which alone can give him this viveka? Is there vairagyam is possible. And how does a person have that viveka? How does that person get that vairagyam? He has to analyze the purusharthas. If you analyze the purusharthas, that is why in the very beginning, in introduction to Vedanta classes, the first thing what we do is analysis of purusharthas. What are those four purusharthas? What is artha? What is kamaha? What is dharmaha? What is moksha? Purusharthas must be analyzed thoroughly. Then we must understand how artha, kama, dharmas are important but relative ends, and how moksha is the absolute end must become very clear. Then we should also understand artha, kama, dharma are subservience. They are all relative ends or means to accomplish the ultimate end, moksha. Moksha is the paramaha purushartha. Moksha is the purushartha. Moksha is the absolute end, ultimate end, absolute human pursuit. That must become very clear. For which analysis is important. And here, Upanishad presents its own way. It says, Parikshalokan karmachitan. Brahmanaha nirveda mayat. I'm changing the words. Okay. Pariksha lokan karmachitan. Lokan pariksha. Lokaha here does not mean the world. The word lokaha literally means world. But here lokaha means all one's accomplishments, achievements in the world. Having pariksha, having thoroughly examined all accomplishments, all achievements, not only one's own achievements, even others' achievements also. Sometimes we wouldn't have achieved anything much. We can analyze even others' achievements also. Oh, so what? So what? That person has become this big. So what? We have to analyze. Therefore, having analyzed thoroughly all accomplishments and achievements accomplished through the actions and endeavors analyzed, karma chitan, that's why these accomplishments, achievements, successes, how karma chitan, achievements earned through one's hard work, endeavors, hardship, no? All activities, karma chitan. By doing so many things, we achieve so many things. Karma chitan lokan parikshya. Is it clear now? Sanskritam is useful now. Karma chitaha lokaha means achieved things achieved through activities, through performance of actions. Karma chitaha lokaha. Karmanachitam karmachitam. Earned through, accumulated through action. As a result of an action. So karmachitan, not one or two, many. Karmachitan bahun lokan pariksha. Having examined them all thoroughly, whatever a person has achieved, he must have achieved everything only by doing karma, by doing something or the other. Therefore, anything and everything attained in life is only through the performance of action, as a result of an action only. Therefore, karma chitan lokan pariksha, thoroughly examined, the person discovers the fact. He must discover the fact. What is the fact he should discover? That no achievement will help me attain moksha. Nothing in the world can make me happy. This, if a person can learn this lesson, that nothing can make me happy, nothing in the world is a source of happiness, nothing in the world is responsible for my unhappiness. If a person can discover this fact, this is the greatest lesson a person learn from one's life's experiences. Analyzing one's own life's experiences, a person must learn a lesson. If a person's life does not help him learn this lesson, the life is a waste. When is this life useful? When does this life become meaningful? The life becomes meaningful when a person analyzing his life's experiences is able to discover the fact that nothing in the world can make me happy. Nothing in the world is a source of happiness. Nothing in the world is responsible for my unhappiness also. This is the one lesson. To learn one lesson properly, one has to live one's life completely. If you're able to learn this one lesson by analyzing your life's experiences, then life has served its purpose. And such a person who is capable of learning this lesson, this one most important lesson in one's life by analyzing one's experiences, and he is said to be Brahmanaha, an intelligent person. Brahmanaha has so many meanings, but in this context, the Brahmanaha is the mature individual, the person of sharp intellect who is capable of, you know, deriving this lesson from his life's experiences. Brahmanaha. Shastram says, your person is not able to learn this lesson, he is not intelligent. What intelligent he is. So he is a Brahmanaha. So if you learn a lesson, you are a Brahmana. The word Brahmana has different meanings. But in this context, the person who is capable of analyzing his life's experiences and thereby capable of learning a lesson from his experiences, that nothing in the world is a source of happiness. Nothing in the world can make me happy. Nothing in the world is responsible for my unhappiness also. The person learns a lesson, then he will not blame the world, nor will he depend upon the world. Then he'll be indifferent to the world. Being indifferent means not taking the world as a source of happiness, not blaming the world as responsible for one's unhappiness is called being indifferent to the world. Nirvedam ayat. Naturally, he becomes dispassionate. Nirvedam ayat means ayati. He becomes dispassionate towards the world. Becomes dispassionate means he does not mistake the world to be responsible for his unhappiness, nor does he take the world to be a source of happiness. He becomes completely, you know, leaves the world aside. Leaves the world as it is. Such a mature individual is called Brahmanaha. Parikshalokan karmachitan. Nirvedamayat Brahmanaha. Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.